Chapter 22. The Ritual. The door opened, banishing the dark and casting a painful blade of light across Hartek's face. He squinted against it. Once again, there was a figure silhouetted in the door. The princeps's life had adopted a new rhythm.
"It is time, princeps," the figure said.
The man who came for him was not one Terent Hartek recognized. He had the short stature of a lower-class man, and though his clothes were rich, they had obviously been provided to him by someone of means. He was cloaked from head to toe in dark red robes, cinched about his waist by a belt of brass chain. Ridiculous cult affectations, Hartek thought. The man was probably no higher than a doulous, one of the Legio peons. The lowly were always the first to tread easy roads to power. He would get none, of course. If he were lucky, he might not suffer too much, as he was used to fulfill some greater man's goals. Hartek wondered how many civilizations had been toppled at the hands of the unwitting poor. Naturally, it always happened for the benefit of powerful men. The poor were levers to be pulled, their sacrifices shifting the positions of influence about. But nothing really changed, not in the long run. The Emperor on Terra was living proof of that. Humanity was a race with a fatal addiction to tyrants. The thing about the oppressed, thought Hartek, is that they remain oppressed no matter what they do. It is their role in life. Far better, he thought, if they accepted their allotted station and did not struggle against it. Terent Hartek was a powerful man. He would still be powerful after this ritual. This pompous fellow, enjoying a few crumbs of influence with his theatrics and his silly costume, would gain precisely nothing from it, except a sense of misguided self-importance. All things have their place and time, he reminded himself. Rituals required certain elements, jumped-up peasants in smocks included. Hartek kept his thoughts to himself and tried to banish contempt from his voice when he got up from his bed and spoke the words he had been told to speak. He just about managed the tone of seriousness expected.
I am ready.
The man bowed low and gestured with a velvet-gloved hand. The material was black, his middle finger ringed with a piece of cheap jewellery, displaying the rune of the war god. Hartek rolled his eyes towards the ceiling.
"Show respect, my lord,"
said the man in a hissing whisper. Hartek frowned. The man had been looking at the floor. How had he seen?
"I'm nervous. I'm sorry." "You should be nervous," said the man.
There was a gloating edge to what he said that Hartek did not care for.
"Lead on,"
Hartek said. The man bobbed his head again, then turned. Hartek followed. He had been told to go bare-chested and barefoot, so he had. His combat fatigues were a jumpsuit, so he wore his dress uniform trousers instead, leaving him feeling simultaneously over- and under-dressed. The deck was cold under his feet. Drafts of recycled air stirred the hair on his chest. He hadn't truly appreciated how cold it was on the station. It should have been warmer. Often overheating was a problem in void installations, with vacuum being a fine insulator. But the place was frigid. He tried to think if it was always that cold, but somehow he couldn't. He experienced the first shiver of unease deep in his gut.
"Is it just me, or has it got colder?" he asked. "Silence," said the man with a backwards glance. "If you must be distracted, meditate on the might of the god of war."
The experience was preposterous, but it appeared the whole hub had bought into the performance. The station corridors were deserted but brightly lit. The ever-present machine song of life support systems hummed away in the background. He did not feel like he was about to undertake a sacred ceremony. Rather, he was reminded of the childish initiation rituals he had been forced to undergo at the Legio Scholastica at the hands of the other pupils. On the route, he saw no other people. They went away Hartek had never been before, and soon he was lost, though he prided himself on his sense of direction. A heaviness overcame his thoughts, and he heard again the far-off blare of brazen horns. The sound had come to him many times, although never so clearly as then. It was distant, as always, but for the first time he was sure he heard it, rather than imagined it. He stopped and looked about.
"Did you hear that?"
he asked. The man chuckled. There was something not quite right about his voice, Hartek decided. It was too wet.
"He is calling you, Korn, the Lord of Skulls."
Hartek's stomach clenched. In the Legio, they rarely said the god's name. He was not superstitious, but hearing it aloud frightened him, and he did not scare easily.
"You heard it too,"
he said agitatedly.
"Come," said the man. "We have a way to go."
He was led into service conduits, so crammed with piping there was hardly room for a man to pass. Smooth plating gave way to grillwork that bit into his feet. It got colder all the time, and his misgivings grew. The sense of unreality only increased. Hidden in the humming workings of the hub, Hartek heard the blasts of horns 7 more times, though these subsequent soundings teased him, staying right on the edge of hearing. The man began to mutter to himself, nasty words with sharp edges and wounding sounds. It got colder yet. Hartek's feet became numb. His blood flowed sluggishly, each heartbeat a congested thump in his sinuses. Presently, they came to a door so mundane in appearance, Hartek almost laughed with relief when the man stopped beside it, and with exaggerated solemnity gestured at its chipped, hazard-striped metal.
"The portal to a new life," he said portentously. "Are you ready?"
The sound of liquids moving through the pipes, the humming of poor-quality lumen globes in the light fittings, the grumbled and short-lived whines and bangs of lifter mechanisms, all conspired to undermine the moment. Some of Hartek's self-assuredness returned, and yet the worm of fear continued to thread its way around his guts.
"I am,"
said Hartek.
"Then enter."
A solitary green lumen above the door switched on. The chipped door moved aside very slowly, Hartek's breath caught in expectation of what he might see beyond. When the room was revealed, Hartek nearly laughed again. The chamber beyond was a simple octagonal robing room for dullards working in hazardous environs. A second door faced the one Hartek stood in, and a single bench ran round every facet, save those pierced by the doors. Hooks were attached to the walls in sets of 4 above the bench, and from them hung heavy plasticized suits with integral gauntlets and boots. They hung like deflated men, their cylindrical headpieces bowed by the weight of the visors each sported. 7 of his fellow princeps stood within, all naked to the waist and bootless like himself, all shivering. They were each accompanied by an attendant like Hartek's. The only thing out of the ordinary in this scene was a large brass pot heating over a portable coil in the dead centre of the room. Vapours rose from it, carrying with them the scent of blood.
"What are we doing?"
Hartek said. The others looked at him. They displayed a variety of emotions. They were princeps, so none exhibited fear, though 1 or 2 certainly felt trepidation. The others were scornful of his lack of respect, all save Peshin Klen of Maniple 5, who shared Hartek's uneasy contempt.
"We can begin," said one of the other attendants.
Hartek knew that voice.
"Kassen,"
said Hartek. Hartek's own guide pushed him against the sole vacant facet of the room.
"Unhand me,"
he growled, catching the fellow about the wrist. His arm was thin, weak.
"You are to do as we command," said the man who was almost certainly Kassen. "You will stand where I say."
Hartek looked to his fellows. He was the only princeps majoris in the room, and by extension the one voted most often to serve as princeps senioris within the group. He was their leader. They watched him carefully to see what he would do. He gave a smile that was mostly false bravado, and cast the man's hand aside roughly.
"Very well,"
he said, holding up his arms.
"Very well. Have at it, Kassen. perform your task. Though, if I had known you were involved in this foolishness, you would not have remained in my employ. This is a version of the blooding, yes? A ritual I've undergone many times. Get on with it.
Casson faced him. Black bandages around his face provided the sense of depthless shadow within the hood. It was a cheap trick, but even so, there was something inhuman about his eyes.
This one shows bravery when he is scared, Casson said to his fellows. They are all scared, these mighty warriors.
He gloated now.
Do not listen to them. They shame themselves in the eyes of the Blood God. We have work ahead to make them worthy.
Silence, said Casson.
I have done much to prepare you for this moment, though you did not see. I will not have you spoil it.
Mark them. Make them ready.
There was an undertone to Casson's words that killed Hartek's outrage dead. He lowered his hands. Paintbrushes were lifted from the pot and moved to the princeps skin, dripping red upon the floor. The warm marks they drew over Hartek's body did nothing to dispel the cold. He watched his servant, the leader of the cultists. Though he was dressed identically to the others, he assuredly was in charge. The princeps to this gaggle of moderati. His influence on them was subtle. Casson hardly spoke to the others, but he exuded an air of ready violence, and they shied from him when he came near.
I never knew he had it in him, thought Hartek.
Warm blood ran over Hartek's body from the sigils they painted. It dried quickly, pulling his skin taut, until his entire body was covered with patterns of itching tightness. The acolytes worked in silence. The delicate movement of the brush relaxed him, and he was lulled into a meditative state. Beneath the calm, a fury stirred, reminiscent of the machine spirit of Nuntio Dolores, although far bigger, an infinity of endless, bloodthirsty rage. It called to him with wordless roars and the blaring of brass horns.
"We are done," said Casson.
Hartek's eyelids opened, cracking the crust of blood painted over them. He felt like he'd been sleeping standing up, though he did not remember falling asleep or even shutting his eyes. The room was shifting, stretching, like shimmering air over sun-baked mudflats or an overheated engine vent.
"Follow!"
Casson beckoned over his shoulder. The acolytes lined the princeps up. All were as dazed as Hartek, some more so. There was a febrile light in their eyes. One of them, Basak, Hartek thought, was jittery, hands clenching, mouth working, a man on the edge of violent outburst. Why couldn't he tell who this man was? Was it Basak? He knew them all, but he didn't know them at all. He couldn't recognize them. His thoughts weren't his own. He felt drugged. No, that was wrong. Was he? He was intoxicated by anger. He wanted to fight.
"The way is open. Open the way. The door parts to the eightfold path," sang the chief acolyte.
His voice was no longer Casson's. Such a pompous thing to say to a door in a room of such mundane purpose. Then the door opened, and it did not seem so foolish any more. Hard orange light flooded the room. Furnace blast roared in. The shock of the heat after the cold came close to flooring Hartek. The air was so hot when he breathed that it seemed too thick to pass into his lungs. He choked. The scent of hot iron and brass was all pervasive. It was like drowning in blood. A giant chamber lay beyond, surprising in its size, and full of diabolical industry. Drums boomed in aggressive arrhythmic contest.
"Onwards!" said the cult leader.
One by one, they were led into the orange light, and a scene of unreality unfolded before them. Dominating the hall were eight warlord titans arrayed around a giant octed graven into the floor. The symbol had been cut half a metre deep into the decking, shearing through wiring and pipes under the plating with a precise, neat carelessness for their function. The titans stood inactive at the points of the octed. They did not appear to have been tampered with, but in the volcanic atmosphere they radiated a sense of divine potency that Hartek was sure owed nothing whatsoever to the machine god. From one wall, Nuntio Dolores stared at him with hungry eyes, like a trusted animal companion gone wild. Hartek and the others were led to posts set between the feet of each titan, from which dangled chains of blackened metal. Scratches in the soot coating them showed a pale gold, suggesting they were of brass. The drums were the discharge of giant guns. They were the pounding of axes on shields. They were rocks smashing into skulls. Hartek let himself be chained to the post between Nuntio Dolores's legs. With a curious sense of detachment, he wondered why he did not resist. But by the time the sluggish thought had wound itself through the folds of his brain, he was held fast, arms crossed above his head. Nuntio Dolores's torso projected over him, its massive chin a boulder held in place by some tenuous force on the edge of breaking. Its weapons framed the hall in a murderer's embrace. What purpose the room had before was difficult to say with any certainty. It was vast, its ceiling lost in a confusion of pipes and smoke, and that suggested an assembly yard or manufactorum for larger components of Gardaman Hub's output. It could have been a foundry or a smeltery. But though it was equipped with eight giant crucibles of molten metal, so hot they glowed orange, they seemed too primitive to have been used in the making of voidcraft. They were crude things, the tools of steam engineers, fired by mounds of coals and mounted on cast-iron carts on iron rails. Huge banners, so caked in gore their designs were invisible, shifted in the updrafts coming off the liquid. Small figures moved everywhere between giant machines. Many were clad in the black of the new Mechanicum, but the majority were in the blood-purple robes of cult acolytes, and their number only seemed to increase as Hartek drifted in and out of the moment.
"How did it come to this?" thought Hartek.
A moment of desperate clarity settled on him when he saw the situation as it was. Once he had fought for the imperial truth. Now he was enthralled to a primitive cult. A profound dismay had him, then blew away, cobweb fine, as he slipped and fell into blood-warm torpor. The promise of power beckoned. The brazen horns sang louder in his mind. The drums thundered out their conflicted barrage. Hartek's head pounded with every sounding, like it too were a drum, and his heart also. His eyes swam, refusing to focus, and when they did, he was not sure of what he looked on. Reality smeared, flickered, was replaced by dark images of black flames and screeching monsters. He tried to blink this vision away, but it would not go. When it disappeared and the hall returned, Apostle Vorzhuk Kral was suddenly in the room. Perhaps Hartek had passed out from the heat and come around. The creatures could have been some sort of drug-induced dream, for by now he was certain he had been poisoned somehow. Some time had passed. Kral wasn't there. Then he was, dominating everything around him. He was the sole transhuman in the hall, towering over the unmodified humans and the new Mechanicum alike. Burnished armour reflected the glow of molten metal. The flames painted on his shoulder plates danced with a life of their own. A line of chained, naked slaves, painted red with blood from their shaven heads to the soles of their feet, were led towards the crucibles. They were ecstatic, wailing and singing, their eyes so wide the whites were visible from all the way across the hall. Kral was to perform the ritual, but not alone. Ardim Protos had also appeared from nowhere, and was working his way around the circle with a band of lesser tech priests. They sang hard hosannas in Binharic cant to the god of blood. The air thickened. Clouds of red smoke spilled from their censers. Jabbering cyber constructs wheeled over them like vultures, drizzling vitae from fanged maws. It took the tech priests an age to pass around the great circle, but in no time at all, it seemed, Protos was standing in front of Hartek. The tech priest stopped his procession and approached the princeps. Hartek raised his head with great difficulty. It felt as if it were full of lead. Protoss watched him with interest as he forced his tongue to move.
"What is this sorcery?" he asked.
His words were lumpen, poorly formed, barely intelligible, but Protoss understood.
"It is not sorcery, not quite. This god does not approve of magic tricks. Call it an invitation instead," said Protoss. "All done to the most stringent scientific principles, naturally."
Hartek's head fell forward. Protoss reached out a metal hand to steady it. The prosthetic was so hot, Hartek's skin sizzled.
"You were the most difficult to convince. I am glad you saw sense," he said. "Power of unimaginable potency will soon be yours. All you must do is bear a little pain."
Hartek tried to speak, but his words would not form in his brain, let alone in his mouth.
"What was done on Astagar will be done again. This time it will be better. Our two gods working in one mechanism, with but a few souls required to seal the bargain."
He let Hartek's head drop.
"All for your benefit, of course. The gift of iron, of brass, and of blood is yours. I am almost envious."
Droning chants receded. Hartek's mind slipped further into redness. The horns blared constantly. The ring of blades filled his ears. The next he knew, he was surrounded by the thunder of drums, and a massive armored hand gripped him by the head.
"For the glory of the Pantheon undivided, we beseech you, Khorne, provide us with the might of your right arm."
More words followed. Knives flashed. The patterns on Hartek's skin were renewed as his flesh was opened up, and his own blood overwrote the flaking vitae painted there earlier. Hartek's body screamed, but the pain was distant, and from a far battlefield he looked on his weakness and despised it. Time blinked. Giant machines around the hall whooped with tortured thunders. Lightning streamed upwards. Hartek was shaking from fatigue and loss of blood. The drums reached a brief crescendo. Chanting scaled exultant heights. Kral, now far away again, brandished his maul. It dripped with gore. Teams of sweating slaves tugged enormous chains, and the crucibles rolled to the edge of the octed, hit wedges, and toppled forwards under the force of their own momentum, pouring oceans of spitting metal into the design. The symbol acted as a giant mould. Surging waves of metal rushed down the arms, meeting in the middle with a loud slap of liquid. Droplets burst upwards, showering over the worshippers. They screamed in holy agonies as their robes burst into flames. Kral dropped the head of his maul to the deck with a clang. With a perfunctory brutality, the lines of slaves were shoved into the incandescent metal by the singing cultists. They toppled in neat lines, shrieking out devotions as they plunged under. They rose up, flailing, screaming for real now, human torches whose dying wails joined the chorus of insane worship. The sacrifices were the final act. From high above, a furious voice roared, coming closer rapidly, as if falling from a far-off heaven. Composed of inchoate sounds, the roaring was nevertheless possessed of sentience, and raged against its summoning. Another howling voice joined it, followed by a third and fourth, until eight bellowing demigods joined the choirs of humans screaming out their dedication to the god of blood and war. The roaring descended until it drowned out all else, but Hartek saw nothing. Red lightning sheeted across the hall. Something heavy impacted on Nuntio Dolores, and the machine sagged with the blow. Burning heat blasted from the Titan, immolating the banners arranged behind it. One by one, the other roars cut out, and the Titans were bowed by invisible impacts. The shouting, drumming, blaring, singing praise of Khorne lost its final pretense at musicality, breaking apart into a discordant cacophony of screams and shouts. Worshippers turned upon one another. Knives flashed. Blood hissed on the cooling octed. Hartek's body filled with uncontrollable anger. His muscles swelled. His thoughts fled. Yanking against the chains that bound him until his wrists wept blood, he howled, and, in a new demonic voice, Nuntio Dolores howled with him.